hand over to Godfrey, who will share with you exactly how we structure the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, DJ, for the introduction. And thank you to the committee, honorable members. I'm supported in this presentation by Strenny Palmer, who works in the R&D Tech Study Unit. The question that came through to us was the objective of the presentation should be to assess the levels of the uptake and the impact on development of new products and processes that are supported through the incentive. We have decided to, whereas there are answers to these direct questions, answers to these questions, we have decided to structure the presentation in order to provide a better context of how the incentive contributes to R&D, also to the creation of new products. There are specific slides that are answers the questions that came through directly. The presentation is structured this way, that we first provide an overview of the tech incentive program. We explain the uptake by companies, that is the number of companies across a number of sectors, and the impact areas in terms of the expenditure that's being supported, or leveraged by the incentive, contribution to various industry sectors, participation of small enterprises, and the industrial policy focus areas, as well as the results of the R&D supported. It's not only the new products, but it's a range of results that we achieve through the incentive. And lastly, to explain the process of tabling the 2013-14 annual report to Parliament, which is required by law that the Minister should do. In terms of the overview, any company undertaking R&D in South Africa can qualify for the tax deduction in terms of Section 11D of the Income Tax Act. And the incentive is part of a policy package that DG highlighted some of the approaches that we follow. It's part of this policy package of government to promote economic growth, enhance competitiveness, and other broader objectives. So we see it in that light, that whereas it contributes to encouraging private sector firms to do more R&D in the country, it contributes to other things as outcomes of government intervention. So the incentive is important in order to increase the overall investment in research and development, as honorable members will acknowledge, that it is important that we expand the level of investment in research and development in order to drive economic transformation through innovation and improve competitiveness. It contributes to development of new products, processes and services, and also technological advancements, as well as secure what we call the innovation spillovers and retain the research and development workforce in the country. The incentive offering of South Africa consists of a 150% tax deduction on the expenditure incurred on R&D in the country. And it's one of the more generous, when you compare this with what other countries are offering, the South African one is one of the more generous offer out there. So we've seen, especially developing countries such as Malaysia, Brazil, they are the ones that are offering more generous of incentives out there. To be eligible, a company must be approved. A company's activities must be approved by the Minister of Science and Technology. This is the new approach that started operating since the 1st of October 2012. Before that, companies used to claim the deduction on a retrospective basis, but now they have to get a pre-approval to in order to access the incentive. A company to be incorporated in the country, it must be engaged in eligible R&D within the Republic, that's in first point, and incur the expenditure on or after the date of applying to the DST. And such R&D need to be connected somehow to the production of income, that is a commercial activity. This slide summarizes the process of how the applications are handled. The important point here to emphasize is that the DST works together with the National Treasury and the South African Revenue Service in implementing this incentive. We contribute various roles to the execution or rollout of the incentive. And the other point to emphasize is that since the amendments that we've seen were introduced in 2012, there has been an increased new participant to the incentive. So a slide that we have later on will explain that. So why does the government support private sector R&D? We can say that a company would always do R&D that it requires, it thinks it's necessary for it to survive. But then again, why does government have to get involved in this? In the National Research and Development Strategy that was published in 2002, the declining and the weak growth in research and development in the business sector was identified as a challenge that constrained economic growth in South Africa. And it was proposed strategically that research and development and incentive need to be introduced as part of the set of measures to help stimulate private sector investment in the R&D. But also, when we study the literature on these incentives, we find that generally the rationale for government incentivizing R&D is that of a market failure, that a private sector firms would always do the minimum, but then at some stage, if the government wants to effect development, need to put an incentive in place in order to encourage an added effort by the private sector to do even R&D that is they couldn't have done, or the R&D that has a better a spin-off for the economy in general. This is captured in the bullet points that I highlighted there, that for instance, the government benefits in the following ways: that if a private sector firm funds R&D and completes it, introduces an innovation, the knowledge that's generated from that spills over to other firms, and they copy, they replicate, they also encourage to innovate in the same space. So it's very difficult for one to appropriate knowledge to themselves and use it for their own private benefit, but it benefits the whole the rest of the sectors or the industries as such. But then also the long-term nature of tangible benefits from R&D makes it very difficult for such firms to invest passively. So the incentive helps to facilitate decision-making and induce them to actually do R&D now rather than later. The other point is the high risk that's associated with the R&D create the funding gaps within firms. That is, sometimes it's too risky. You never know when you invest in R&D whether it will be successful or bring successful results or not. So the incentives helps to facilitate decision making on such instances, for a firm to take risks and invest in R&D even when they are not sure that the R&D will be successful or not. So the point here is that the incentive will support any firm that incurs a expenditure on eligible R&D, whether the outcomes of such R&D will materialize or not. So it actually deals with the risk part of that investment. The last two points are actually very critical when it comes to small firms. The inability to attract external funding due to information asymmetries that sometimes for small firms or startups, they find it very difficult and risky to approach funders, external funders, and attract funding. But if you haven't got a reputation of having invented something, how do you convince new funders? It's very difficult to do that, but sometimes there's a risk that you may lose your IP to strong players in the market if you try to attract external funding. So incentive by government helps to deal with that, bridge that gap. I've already spoken about the positive externalities that the knowledge generated from R&D funded by a private firm and the human capital, as well as the learning and technology that comes with it, creates spillovers that benefit the rest of the economy. And also, you will see in the slides, give a little bit of ideas, that the long-term returns from R&D, they far outweigh the tax expenditure that the government foregoes. That is, if we incur the 3.2 billion rand that we've indicated here, we leverage a whole lot more in terms of private sector investment. But then the value that's generated out of new products that are invented, and the reputation and all that goes with that, competitiveness, if you measure that appropriately, you would actually see that the government is foregone tax revenue is outweighed by the benefits on the other side. But also, this doesn't come free for government. There are skeptics that say tax incentives create certain problems in the system. So it's up to the government, in this case the DST working with SARS and Treasury, to make sure that the systems for administering the tax incentive are efficient and don't cost the government too much. In terms of answering the question that came from the portfolio committee about the uptake, this slide summarizes the uptake since 2006, when the incentive was enhanced to offer a 150% tax deduction. What we see here is that each bar represents the number of firms that take part in the incentive each year. But then again, you do have repeat applicants, because some firms do incur R&D on a yearly basis, and then they're required to actually claim for such years. So you would see that at least 70 firms since 2007 have been, new firms have been taking part in the program. And the total that we see over this time is that 820 firms have taken part in the incentive, each year adding at least 70 firms. The 2012-13 bars reflect where the change happens. That is when the retrospective submission stopped, which is represented by the blue bar. Then the green bar reflects the way forward in terms of the companies have to apply upfront in order to get approval. In the 96 firms are the ones that have submitted forms for retrospective, and so to avoid double counting, we count the 96 and then for the pre-approval. So what we see is that there was a whole lot of response in 2012-13, with a total of 414 firms submitting applications or claims. The incentive is available to companies across all sectors, and any size of the firm can apply for the incentive. This slide summarizes the distribution of how the uptake has been by industry sectors in terms of the 820 firms that are participating in the incentive. We find that more than 80% of the participating companies are considering two sectors, which is the manufacturing and also the call it the software development sector, because that sector of financial intermediation and business services is dominated by the software development. So it's manufacturing and software development, basically. And these patterns have remained the same over the years when we look at it in terms of timelines. But also, it's a similar picture that we see when we evaluate the trends in general business sector R&D investment in the country. That's how it's spread in the country. In terms of size of firms, we've tried to group the size of firms by ranges of annual turnover. The latest year reported that we find that small medium enterprises make about 46% of the total number of participating firms, and that is the same number percentage as the what we call large firms, which have a turnover of 40 million rand and above. So the percentage of SMEs applying for the incentive has increased in the past 2 years following the October 2012 amendment. That is, we find that a whole lot of small medium enterprise firms are in the software development space. This is now the balance that we see in terms of the reported the figures reported by National Treasury as the tax revenue foregone due to R&D tax deductions. They reported that about 3.2 billion rand. But then we need to be careful here that the timelines of these data, two data points, is not the same. The expenditure foregone is reported on retrospective basis, whereas the R&D incentive investment includes some parts which is forward-looking. So it's fair enough to compare the 3.2 billion with the 25 billion rand, which is on the top, the middle green box. Then the other last one, which is the applications going forward, we rather not compare to that. But on the rough balance of things, you can see that the 3.2 billion leverages about 25 billion rand over time of R&D investment that's supported by firms. In terms of the R&D expenditure, that's why I concentrate from this slide onward on the retrospective basis that are up to October 2012, the 25 billion rand. The bulk of that expenditure is in the manufacturing sector and also the software development sector, the same picture as we see in the total number of firms participating. There is also a need to look at this spread of beneficiary companies in terms of whether they are, these firms, are they in the areas that are prioritizing the industrial development, industrial policy action plan. We find that about 74% of the participating companies are in those areas, and they account for about 55% of the reported R&D expenditure. The top four of those are the upstream oil and gas. In terms of the investment, size of investment, 4.6 billion rand. The chemicals, cosmetics, pharmaceuticals, and plastics, with about 4 billion rand. Electrotechnical and ICT, and then the automotive components, and the commercial vehicle sector. In terms of size spread by size, about 80% of the R&D expenditure that's reported is concentrated in the larger firms. You can see that it's not just the larger firms, but the very large firms of turnover of 100 million and above. I can say that the same picture we see in the R&D trends generally in the country, that it's about less than 20% of the large R&D performance that contributes to the 80% of the R&D expenditure by business sector in the country. So the picture on its own is not a surprise to the department. But then again, the department continues to monitor the uptake by SMEs very closely, that we would like to see this cohort of small medium enterprises that have accessed the incentive, whether they would be able to complete the R&D that they say they will complete and still successfully claim the incentive, the overall amount of deductions that they have claimed, whether they will be able to utilize it, and then what type of innovations they will benefit from that. This slide responds directly to the question that the committee requested, that how many products or what's the nature of products that are being supported through the incentive. About we we aggregated the data that are reported by companies when they claim for the incentive. What happens is that the methodology is that when a company claims the tax deduction from SARS, they send a form to the DST with a whole range of information about how much they have incurred in terms of R&D, what have they achieved so thus far, and what do they anticipate to get. So part of those questions is this data that we are projecting here, that about 416 companies indicated that they have introduced or launched some form of new product. So those new products, it's 1,062 in number from the count that we have. We also see that about 55 companies have reported about 765 scientific publications. 81 companies have reported some local patents. 33 have reported some international patents. 649 conference proceedings that were reported from by 53 companies, and also 111 other IP outputs. These are things like trademarks, designs, copyrights, and things like that, that were reported by some 50 firms. So we need to qualify these numbers, that because R&D, being a lengthy process whose results take several years to materialize, these are work in progress status reports that we won't be surprised if there is more that could have been achieved in terms of the R&D that has been supported. But then such information keeps on filtering through. We'll update information as that information comes through. Some of the results of the R&D that was undertaken in 2012, we'll find that they only register a patent or later on, or they introduce a new product 5 years later or something like that, or the new firm can be started off out of that R&D spin-off company years later. So it takes a bit of time. So the results indicated are just a simplified aggregation available as reported by the companies, and it's in no way showing the complete picture of the effect of the impact of the incentive. So we also think that further analysis is necessary to appropriately quantify the impact of the incentive. But to start with that process, we still need to reconcile the data that lies between DST and the SARS, and the timing of such data in terms of the number of beneficiary companies. So what we have here is the companies that have indicated to the DST that yes, we have claimed the deduction from SARS, but we still need to compare that with SARS to say how many companies actually approached you and actually successfully received the deduction, and compare the amounts in terms of how much did they do that. But such is a work that still need to be undertaken between DST and SARS. But also, beyond the simple comparison of administrative records, it's an issue of how do we find an appropriate methodology to properly quantify the impact, because impact happens over and above what we have in our administrative record. We can estimate the additional or incremental R&D that has been induced in firms, but also the second order effects in terms of creating new knowledge, patents, propensity to come up with innovative new products. There are methodologies out there which we can use to do this, but such work needs to be done or undertaken somehow by a process that involves independent assessment, not only by the department, but even by people outside the department to actually give an independent assessment of those, but also the economic performance of beneficiary firms in terms of do we know how much revenues or proportion of revenues are these firms generating from new products, what are the productivity gains, and whether the incentive is helping to bring in new performance, R&D performance. Whereas we can report here that each new year we are receiving about 71, at least 71 companies, new companies. But whether the incentive is actually encouraging new firms that have never done R&D before to undertake R&D in the country or bring in the international R&D into the country so as to expand the base of R&D performance or research as such. In conclusion, Chair, there is a process that's still underway to prepare a 2013 annual report for tabling to Parliament. This is a requirement by law that the Minister need to, on an annual basis, report to Parliament about the direct benefits of the activities supported by the incentive in terms of the objectives that have been set. So such a report is still being finalized in the department and will be submitted for tabling to Parliament upon approval. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that good presentation. I'm not sure whether Dr. Philly wanted to add. Okay. Members, that's the presentation. But it's interesting. I'm not sure how many of us members. I must be honest. I didn't know about this. But I'm wondering how many of us knew about this innovation and this tax incentive to try and develop our country. And how many industries do know that there's something of this nature that could happen? Well, obviously, when we talk about rural development, and I think we've just been complaining now that it's difficult to drive around Cape Town in the morning and in the afternoon. And the simple reason is because there's very little that has been done in the rural areas in sense of developing them. I used to know in the former days where industries were given tax incentives to go and build industries in rural areas. So this could go on very well when you, instead of bringing everything to Cape Town, you take some of them to Worcester, Fort Beaufort, and that relieves the pressure of everything happening in Cape Town. For me, I'm seeing this incentive not going beyond what you're talking about R&D, but it is not for you. But the other interesting question is, which I didn't get it very clearly, but if you could stress, if I could understand it more, you're saying even international R&Ds, they get this when they come to South, as long as they're going to be here in South Africa. If you could explain that more. Members, that is the presentation. I'm not sure whether you have got any questions. The question that I was posing to you is whether were you aware of this. I must be honest, I was not aware of it. Until I read it, I read the document. But I'm not sure how many of us were aware of this, let alone that our politicians are supposed to be the ones who take this information to our constituencies. Probably, let's hope that it's only me who didn't know about this. Okay. Okay, members, the country is ready for us with this good presentation. Okay, Natasha, I'll see your hand.
Thank you, Chair. I also didn't know about it, I will be honest. I just have two questions for you, Godfrey. What is the department doing in terms of sort of marketing this tax incentive to smaller businesses on the ground and so forth? Because you don't want to also see a thing that more bigger role players are just taking and grabbing on it, and then you have smaller businesses that can also do or R&D and develop new products and so forth. So what is the department doing in marketing this incentive, one? And then two, what is your monitoring and evaluating procedure pertaining to this incentive? Do you monitor the businesses that do get this incentive after maybe a year or two, when do you monitor them as well? If you can just give me enlighten me on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Natasha. You know, while they're still thinking who's going to ask questions, I was in Germany. I moved around rural areas there, which, by the way, are very beautiful and are well-developed, the rural areas. And there are a lot of industries in the rural area. But what I noticed with them is that they've got good innovations. I mean, if they produce something, it's a very good thing, durable, but they don't shout about them because they're very clear that they're doing something good. And most of the things that they're doing, they get stolen by America, by China. And China and America, they make so much noise, and you think that it's coming from China or America, yet it was originally coming from Germany. It's because they're so, maybe, I don't want to say they're arrogant, but they know when they have done something, it's very good. And they don't have to market themselves. Maybe that little bit of arrogance, because they do so much good. Maybe I'm hoping that we're not at that level of thinking that we're so good, so we don't have to shout about our things. We've got to keep quiet because they're very good. Okay, Annelien?
Thank you, Chair. I recall that at one of our meetings, I just don't know which one, I think it was with an NRF presentation, or we saw, a whole day where we saw the different entities, and a comment was made that maybe one of the reasons, because I specifically asked, but why don't companies take up this incentive? And one of the replies from, I don't know which entity it was, that because it is quite cumbersome, the whole process of applying for this tax incentive, maybe it could be simplified. So I would like some comments on that. And then also in terms of, if one looks on slide number 9, how it is distributed amongst the different sectors, and one can see that manufacturing and financial intermediation, real estate and business services take up apparently most of, or have the most applications for this incentives. I'm a bit concerned if one looks at electricity, gas and water supply, because that's one of the major problems in our country, and that's surely an area in which we need innovation. And is the department doing anything perhaps in that regard to encourage sectors, industries in those sectors to really make use of this incentive? Thank you.
Certainly. I don't see any other hands. Maybe we can respond to those questions there.
Thank you, honourable members, for the questions. In terms of broad awareness, we have done some awareness creating activities in the earlier years, around 2008, 9, 10. But we have scaled down after that, but then it's important that we continue to create awareness, especially in the say the specific focus areas like small medium enterprise, because we know there's information gaps generally about government support programs around SMEs. But with respect to specific sectors, including this one of the water, electricity and gas, I may not have the specifics of but I know that we engage a whole lot with the different industry associations, and also working with the Department of Trade and Industry to try and promote this across the board, because the incentive is available to companies in all sectors and any size of a company. But I must say that in the past year we haven't really done a lot of exercise, other than putting the information on the website and then relying on the material that is published on incentives within government. But I know that it's an area that we need to do better in terms of awareness creation. The other thing is that when we run the national surveys on research and development, which targets all firms that do research and develop, invest in research and development, we include a one-page flyer in there. But also, we do also get an indication, because there's a question in there which asks firms if they've ever participated or claimed the incentive, where we pick up these responses in terms of awareness. We need to use that information more. But then companies may be aware, but whether do they end up applying for the incentive, that could be another question. And if applying for the incentive, do they actually access the incentive benefit? Those are questions of monitoring and evaluation that we need to put in place and strengthen. The application process, we have changed it in October 2012, because before, companies used to claim the tax deduction on a retrospective basis. From the outcry at that time, we then changed the process to say, let them apply before they can qualify, with the hope of simplifying processes and making things more clearer to companies. To if they know about the approvals early enough, then they are more certain in terms of the risk aspect that I explained earlier. They're more certain in terms of their investment, other than going all the way to invest and then retrospectively you then don't get anything. So we were hoping that will happen. But it's a space that we are monitoring closer. It's still a new process. We need to know how well it's doing in terms of changing the concerns that were raised then before we changed the law in 2012. Monitoring and evaluation. The multinational companies, yes, the multinational companies can benefit from the incentive as long as they incur expenditure on eligible R&D in the country. That's important. They must incur the expenditure in the country and do R&D in the country. There are certain considerations that goes with that from the strategic risk point of view, and also on the negative side is risks connected to that, where the design of the incentive need to guard against the abuse, possible abuse by such, but also multinational companies carries with them a whole lot of practices that if they do R&D in the country, sometimes there's spin-offs in terms of the knowledge that they have spilling over to the rest of the sector in terms of technology transfer and the knowledge diffusion. From literature, we pick that up, that they are the best companies to actually diffuse new knowledge and push the frontiers. But we also need to monitor that space very closely in terms of what is the effect, the real effect in the South African regime, to say whether they are bringing us what we would anticipate as the benefit of international R&D or not. So, but they do benefit as long as they incur R&D in the country. But also the other thing in terms of the awareness, we have published the draft amendments for refinements to clarify certain things and correct certain administrative limitations in the process. And the type of response that we receive from far wide in terms of firms, even in the public consultations processes and meetings that we have, we find that there's a whole lot of firms from across the range of sectors that participate in these processes. So that is also another gauge that we can use to say, yes, there is awareness out there, but then we still need to do a little bit more in terms of that. I hope I have. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, There is a system that we have introduced also in 2012 of annual progress report, because if the companies apply upfront, then once approved, they are required to give us a progress report in terms of the amount of expenditure they have incurred, the amount, the number of people that they employ, the nature of R&D personnel they employ, and what kind of outputs they are achieving, and things like that. The database is not yet rich, so it's something that we are still, the approved companies still need to come back to us and report to us, so it's still being built. But the type of information that we have, which spans for 7 years, since 2006, is a good basis to start any form of evaluation. And we think that we have sufficient information in terms of the number of firms, the 820 firms that participate in their information, for some intelligent exercise to be done in understanding the effect and impact of this.
Just a comment on the, what are we doing for the marketing of this. We're fortunate that because this is to do with the tax base, we have virtually most of the tax consultants representing the Big Four or smaller boutique firms who want this incentive both in South Africa and internationally for foreign investment. And when it comes to monitoring and evaluation, again, because this is due with the tax base, when you fill in your IT-14 as you would in personal income tax, you have to state the amount in which you're claiming, in which we as the DST would monitor. If you're changing a nut and a bolt, but you're claiming 60 million rand, we would flag that as something wrong. So in terms of evaluation, we're pretty stringent on that side. Just on the distribution of this in terms of ICT development and the financial intermediation, yes, we are trying to get more people, more companies from the electricity, gas, and water to take this incentive on. Technology in the ICT space just so happens to be progressing at a much faster rate, and so it's a natural conclusion of what we typically see in the R&D environment.
Thank you very much. I don't see any hands for follow-up. I take it that we... Oh, yes, Natasha.
Thank you, Chair. I just like one last one that I've missed. Earlier on, you talked about, I think, risk somewhere in there. So say for instance, if I were to apply and I say I can make a juice that will give you so much energy without me putting the caffeine in, and then I apply for the fund and this thing happens to fail, which systems are you taking in also ensuring that that component is addressed? If I happens to apply and then my juice doesn't give you the energy that I said initially I would within my application.
Yes, like I said, the R&D, when somebody engages in R&D, you have an idea that I can make something, but then you engage in this process, systematic scientific work, to say, let me test this thing and see how it works, try to develop it. Sometimes it can be successful, sometimes it may not be successful. But the issue here is that when we look at research and development, we see it as an investment that you incur expenditure, a speculative expenditure to say, I'm convinced that this can work, but then if it doesn't work, you have done that investment. In doing so, you have employed a people in doing that. You have developed capacity in the country to do such kind of research. So the expenditure that you incur in doing that can qualify for the incentive, because in the bigger scheme of things, we're encouraging companies to take such risks. Because should 100 companies that engage in that risk journey of doing R&D be successful, the outcome is bigger. But if they fail, then they'll be compensated by some other success that are happening in other places. But then again, by engaging in R&D and fail, you might try it again and get something better. So there's a whole different the view on how we see R&D as an investment.
Could I just add two comments, Chair, with your permission? Honorable Low, if you are a firm and you want to decide on producing a juice differently, you would invest a little bit of your own money in doing it. Government, not only science and technology, have other schemes to support industrial innovation in the firms. There is a scheme that is administered by the Department of Trade and Industry, which is called Support Program for Industrial Innovation. So if you want to do an innovation and you can convince this scheme, Support Program Industrial Innovation, shortly called SPI, what they do is they take your proposal, they subject it to people who are experts in the field to say, is this feasible or not? If it's feasible, they will provide you with some support. I don't know exactly how the scheme works. And then if you produce your juice, it's fine. And then if you have incurred your cost, you come to us and you say, I've incurred cost for R&D, and then this incentive would work. So you could actually get support on the two aspects. So I just wanted to provide that. And then on the electricity, gas and water, there is also work that we're doing with the Water Research Commission. At the moment, we are developing a roadmap, especially to address technologies on the water sector. And for Honorable Lotrit, we'll be happy to, again, I think it's under this program, where we can give details of some of the work that we are doing or we'll be undertaking to try and make sure that we innovate around water, which we know is going to be the next biggest challenge. And I think Stine has already talked about some of the attempts on electricity and gas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I think we are almost at an end. Firstly, DG, we accept your first quarter report with its amendments and its reasons why you didn't achieve the 26-29%. So we accept this R&D tax incentive report, which is eye-opening, and we definitely think it's something that we need to know more about it. But to go back to what Anneli was saying, Honorable Lotrit was saying, is that I think it's important that we need to simplify it so that it's easy for people to understand when you apply for it. And obviously, we need to know more about the other departments like the DTI that one can start there before coming to you. I'm very happy with what you said about the multinationals, that nothing about us without us. As long as they're going to do something that we want them to do, that we're going to be able to monitor, they can come in and they can benefit, but it must be according to our needs, not their way of doing things, because we can get into something that we didn't expect or we didn't realize it was going to happen. So I think one of the things that probably, I think, which is not about what we're doing now, I think, but I'm mentioning it because you, Dr. Phillips, the head of development, you are here. I think all this science and technology, science is a twin to mathematics. They go together. But by the look of things, we were not aware how important this development is. And I think most of the people are not aware, even now. Maybe they are aware, but we get scared to venture into science. We think that is difficult. And but even now we seem to be concentrating at a postgraduate level. And probably by that time we are too late, because we could have started early on. And I think we need to find a way of how do we start at an early level, so that by the time we get to postgraduate, everybody knows. Not I'm not saying that it's easy, science and maths is easy, but I'm saying that we mustn't be deterred by that. We must start very early. I was discussing with my son, who was saying, no, I want to do maths literacy. Why? He said, no, because I want to pass. I want to pass quickly. I say, Chief, you must always look at the quality and the quantity. I think the quality of maths literacy, to go and do the real maths. And now he was telling me last week that, no, it was good that you told me, you forced me to do this. Now I'm enjoying it. But I was afraid of it because everybody told me that it's difficult. So I think we need to take that one out. We are going to be visiting your institutions. I don't know, but Shanaz is going to tell us when are we visiting, including UWC. We'll make sure that we start with UWC, but Shanaz is going to make an application to Castle's wife. You must make that application so that we say we are going to, and the leader is Castle.
She knows today, so that next week we call her.
Okay, thank you very much.